Welcome, listeners. This is MWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project. Today is May 11th, and tonight we're talking with the authors of two books on teacher writers. I'm your host, Tom Fox, broadcasting from the MWP office in Chico, California, which is in my backyard. Summer is the time for invitational institutes at Mini Writing Project, time for great teachers to gather, learn, and, of course, write. Teachers' writing is one of the distinctive practices of the National Writing Project, a practice that embodies our respect for the knowledge and agency of teachers, and one that teachers often point to when advocating for the value of the National Writing Project and the Invitational Institute. So tonight, we're pleased to have several guests talk with us. We have all known each other for many years, so in some ways we'll be dropping in on a conversation that started way before this show and will go on afterwards. Tonight, we're welcoming Christine Dawson of the Capital Area Writing Project in New York.
Hello.
And hi, Christine. And
hi.
Leah Zeidema from the Red Cedar Writing Project. Say hello.
Hey, Tom. So glad we could be here.
And Troy Hicks from the Chippewa River Writing Project in Michigan.
Thanks a lot. Looking forward to it.
So, I'm going to give you the title and authors of the book. We have the teacher writer creating writing groups for personal and professional growth, and that's Christine Dawson's book. And then co-authored by four people, Coaching Teacher Writers, Practical Steps to Nurture Professional Writing, Troy Hicks and Zeidema are two of the authors. Missing tonight are Anne Elrod Whitney and James Frederickson, who couldn't be here with us, but your book is admirably represented. So I thought I'd start by just asking you, like, what were you hoping to accomplish by writing these books? What is the purpose, and really, what is the inspiration behind the book? And I think I'll introduce Leah and Troy first, and you can talk about your book and how it evolved.
All right. Well, this is Leah, and you had mentioned our writing group, and we do wish that Anne Whitney and Jim Frederickson could be here. We actually had a writing group meeting earlier in the day, and we call our writing group JALT, and that just stands for Jim, Anne, Leah, and Troy, and it's easy to put on our calendar. And it's the time that we spent working in that group that really led to this book. All of us love working with writers, and we love working with teachers. And one of the themes in our work has been teacher writers, and what does it mean? Who are these people? To us, they're really special, and we see ourselves as teacher writers, and we think that there are some special ways of working with teacher writers and things that we noticed were common themes across our practices. Things that we wanted to talk about with each other and write about with each other, and things that we wanted to share with others, because we noticed that, you know, people would ask us, well, how do you do this and why do you do that? And it just seemed like a good occasion to be able to share that in the form of a book.
Cool. How did your writing group start?
Troy, yeah. You might have to help me with that.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a surprise question.
No.
I was just thinking as you were talking about, where did that start?
No, it's a great question. I believe the current version of the group, which has actually been the longest version of the group, started in 2010, if that is what I'm remembering correctly, as the Disney World Convention.
Yes, Orlando National Council of Teachers of English.
Yeah, Jim and I had been part of another writing group before that. So Jim and I have actually collaborated since graduate school in a writing group. So going on probably 12 years ago now, 10, 12 some odd years ago. And then, like I said, Ann and Leah, Jim and I all sat down in Orlando and reconstituted the group around with the four of us, and it's been together ever since.
That's cool. Well, Leah, it's always a good sign of a sustainable writing group, but you can't actually remember when it started. Troy, go ahead and you know, if you have something to add to Leah's comment.
Yeah, I would just say a couple of the things that kind of guide our thinking about the book. Of course, we have an opening section which grounds our work. We were fortunate enough to write with Bob Yagelski, who I know also knows Christine well, and we'll probably talk about him in a moment. We were fortunate enough to write with him an article for Research in the Teaching of English, kind of framing our perspective on teachers as writers. And then we had also done a presentation at the Conference on English Education, I believe in 2013. And from there, that really helped us grow the outline for the book. And the middle section of the book, part two, is really about concrete strategies. And then our final section is about sustaining the work. And probably my favorite part of the book, actually, is Appendix B. We pulled out all the questions, kind of protocol scenarios, all the ways that we help teacher writers in all different stages of the writing process, and captured them in one appendix, which is a nice, clear, succinct way to see all those questions in one place.
Cool. Christine, what about you?
Well, there's some really nice overlaps between the two books. We were talking about this before we went on air. My book is very much situated in a writing group as well. In my case, it's a little different because it's situated more from the inside of a writing group, looking at what can happen when teachers write. And like Leah said, I very much situate myself or think of myself as a teacher writer. Our writing group began in 2008, I think, with myself and four beginning teachers. So I had been their instructor, and then we all became kind of more on a par with each other as we all sort of entered into this writing relationship. And the real interest for all of us was to think about, amidst our busy lives as teachers, in which we were doing a lot of writing every day, how could we create some space for writing that we initiated, that we cared about, and how could we support each other in that process without making it feel like one more thing that we were trying to do, like one more added element on a to-do list. And so that really became sort of the inspiration for starting a writing group, was to build these relationships and to continue to grow as writers. And then that ultimately became sort of the impetus for writing the book, is we had, I think, some pretty exciting things that came out of that experience, and I became very eager to share that with other teacher writers who might be seeking to do some similar work in their own lives.
Cool. For a lot of listeners from the Writing Project, they're gearing up for an invitational institute, and the institute has always, from the beginning in 1974, included teachers writing, and often that is both personal and professional, but it's also aimed towards improving the teaching of writing. I think both of your books go more broadly than that and deeper than that. So I'd be interested in thinking about, you know, your answer to the question, why should teachers write? And Troy, do you want to start us off here?
Sure. I think for me, when I'm working with teachers and talking with teachers and trying to help teachers think through their practice, the main point for me about why they should write is that it's an opportunity for growth and change, both through reflection and through advocacy. And I think that, you know, many teachers come from a history of writing instruction, unfortunately, where they feel like, oh, I don't know that I really had much to say. I wasn't a good writer in school. Yeah, I got an A in English, but I don't think I'm that great of a writer, or whatever the case might be. And we want them to move beyond just that kind of perfunctory vision of writing, what our friend Ann Whitney would call schooly types of writing. And so we want them to share. And I think that one of the best ways that they can share and reflect and advocate is through writing. So in particular, I think of my friend and colleague and co-director of our writing project, Jeremy Heiler. He came to our Summer Institute in 2010 and really would admit that he needed a shot in the arm. He felt like he was just struggling in the classroom, not sure exactly what he wanted to do. He especially wanted some help thinking about how to get kids right with technology. And since 2010, I'm proud to say that I've written a number of things with Jeremy, some book chapters. He's written some blog posts. We've written some blog posts together. But most importantly, we've written two books together, Create, Compose, Connect, and a book that will come out very soon, From Texting to Teaching. And so I look at the transformation that Jeremy's undergone as he's thought about who he is as a teacher and who he is as a writer. And it's just one of many stories that I think all of us could share about individual teachers, but it represents the types of growth and change that can happen for them when they pick up their pen or put their fingers to keyboard and begin to write.
So that's really, it's really interesting. And if you think about writing, it has this dual nature that, you know, as a part of reflection, it changes ourselves. And then when it goes out in the world, it changes other people, structures, practices. So both inward and outward change. That was great. Leah, do you have things to add to Troy?
Yeah, I think that's very nicely put, that inward and outward piece of it. You know, I think one of the main principles that we talk about early on in the book, when you think about, you know, why coaching or why vet, what do we value, we talk about three big things, and one of them is what we mean by writing. And we talked about writing as a practice of discovery, that idea of how do I know what I think unless I write it, and that in the process of wanting to maybe share with somebody else or just have that experience of writing and reflecting, we may or may not come to a spot where we decide we want to publish. And we talk about that later on in the book, too. We have a chapter about helping teacher writers navigate publishing. And I think we're pretty firm there that being a writer doesn't necessarily mean that everything that you do is published or that everything gets published in the places that maybe you wanted it to be published. And what we're trying to work there with is the idea of moving away from thinking that publication defines you, but also that it can be kind of a special practice for doing advocacy work. And one place that I've seen that, there's a blog called Writers Who Care and Teachers, Profs, Parents. And they are at writerswhocare.wordpress.com. And they invite writing there from classroom teachers who care about authentic writing, from professors, and also from parents. And it's a way to think about what's the change that you want to see in your classroom or what's a good practice that you want to share with somebody else. And how do you do that in a way that makes sense to a parent who might otherwise be worried about what's happening or not able to support a student at home? How do you do that in a way that makes sense to other teachers so that they'll be interested? How do you do that in a way that connects with what's happening in research? And so there's a really recent post in this week. It's by Christina Ponzio, and it's called Finding Their Voices, Four Ways to Support Bilingual Writers. And I just think it's such a great example of a teacher who's willing to say, here are some things that I learned about working with English learners in the writing classroom. Here are some practical things that I do. And it's something that if a parent comes across it, they can share it with their school. If a teacher sees it as a reader, they might want to connect with her or build from that idea. And it's just the power of writing is really the power to change.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. That blog sounds really fascinating. And the whole premise of it fits really well with your book and with probably what Christina's going to say right now when she talks about, writing in her book, the goal of it.
Yeah. Well, definitely. And it's funny that you mentioned that the blog, and Leah, if I'm not mistaken, you've been one of the founders of that blog, and now Jim is another heavily involved. I think your whole writing group has been very involved in that blog. Am I right?
Yeah. Troy and Ann have also served as reviewers and have done some writing for the blog. And my term has come up, so I'm not an editor for the blog at this time, but just very impressed with the way that the editorial team continues to find teachers who want to write and share their stories and kind of walk alongside them in doing that.
Yeah, and what's so fascinating is this is also an example of sort of like the cross-pollination across these discussions, because one of my writing group members has recently written in your blog, and
that's cool.
That opportunity to publish, and she brought that piece of writing to our group at several different points, and then also got extensive feedback through the editors and the reviewers of the blog. So I think it's a kind of a cool crossover piece. And I have to agree with what Troy and Leah have spoken about already, just some of the power and the potential of writing. And I think this is so well documented, not only from the standpoint of when we write ourselves as teachers, it opens up opportunities to think about our own practice alongside that of our students. And so there's been a lot that's been written and studied, and very notably by the National Writing Project, on what kind of pedagogical and professional opportunities get opened to teachers who are actively engaged in their own writing. One of the things that sort of grabbed a hold of our group early on was this sense that as much as we were drawn to writing, we also were really sometimes struggling finding time for that writing. And then as we got into our own writing projects and as we got into the writing group, we started to notice other things that were coming out of our experience writing together. And this is where, as Troy alluded to, Bob Yagelski's work, I think, was really informative. And I was delighted when Bob agreed to write the foreword of my book for that reason. He gets into the significance of your experience while writing alongside and sometimes as being even more significant than any text that or product that might come out of it. And I think this really informed a lot of what I thought about in writing my own book, was how often we sometimes position teachers' writing as beneficial to the field, beneficial to the classroom, and it becomes somewhat product-oriented, even though those products are very rich and worthwhile. And what I started to see happen in the writing group, and that became very exciting to write about in the context of the book, was what else is going on and what happens within teachers ourselves as we're engaged in writing. And I started to shift some of my own focus away from thinking about being a teacher writer to thinking about what I was doing and what my fellow writing group members were doing as teacher writers. One of the examples, you know, linking back to what Troy was talking about, is one of the group members, Christina. There's a text that I share in the book about that comes out of her first year teaching, and it's February of her first year in the classroom. And I think it's such a good example because she ends up writing this sort of epic poem kind of narrative, like mixed genre piece, that really allows her to explore what she was feeling about how her teaching life as a first-year teacher was really feeling consuming to her, and how she was feeling like she was battling that kind of consumption and that fear of consumption. And that process of her writing that piece and that process of her sharing that piece and discussing it, you know, so that the experience of writing and the experience of talking about her writing, I think did really significant work in her life. And she has credited on several occasions with how that helped her kind of create space to stay in the classroom and stay present in her students' lives. And also just kind of keep Christina in front of herself. So I think that kind of gets at some of that, you know, why, what else can we benefit as teacher writers?
So Christina, did at the conversation about what the writing did for her, was that part of your writing groups? Did that happen deliberately or just sort of, the reflection on its work for her?
It happened in
the group?
Definitely. We tend to, within our writing group, we're very focused on the first and I can go into this a little bit more later, but the first section of our group, we're catching up on each other's lives, and then we do share texts and talk in depth about our texts. So she has talked about the role of that piece of writing in a number of different contexts. One was definitely in the process of writing it over a number of different sessions. And then later, as we engaged in reflecting on our work as a writing group, that was one piece that on a number of occasions she has gone back to and said, she's used it as an example to say, for example, when I wrote this piece, this is some of the work it did and some of the significance of the experience of writing it on her own life.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah, that's great. The three of you talked a little bit about sort of why write, what the importance of it does, what it does for teachers. And I'm curious, in the next section, we're going to talk about how writing projects or anyone who starts a writing group actually can best support teacher writers, and what can writing projects do. And I was thinking as I was listening to you all, like to also address, like, what is distinctive about the teacher part of teacher writers, like in writing groups? What makes working with teachers, especially interesting because we are all teachers, that's one reason, but I wonder if there's things that you think are different about working with teachers that from, you know, working with students or something. But The base question is, how do we best support teacher writers? And Leah, you're up first.
Yeah, I think that's such an interesting question that you asked about the difference between teachers and whether it's other professions or working with teachers versus working with students and people who see themselves primarily as students. I think part of it is that for teachers to even imagine themselves as teacher writers. I think a lot of people say my identity or the primary thing that I do is to teach others. And sure, if somebody asks me, do I write lesson plans? Yep, I write those. Do I write emails? Yeah. I write those. Do I put things in a parent newsletter? Yes, I write those. Does that make me a writer? And I think most people would probably have just the gut reaction of, well, no, a writer is somebody who maybe they think writes novels, or maybe they think is somebody who writes journal articles or for a magazine or for a blog. But helping people just to envision that they're already doing things where they make choices as writers, and that they might be doing things in places like emails, that's actually where writing starts sometimes, or the identity of teacher writers, where when you're coaching a teacher writer, where you say, you know that email that you've probably written 15 different times, you've had to explain the same thing, or that conversation that you've had in so many different places, you know, at the bus stop, at a party, or wherever it might be, that thing that you have to keep explaining to other people over and over again, you could write that. Or that email that you really took a long time to labor over, and maybe you wish it was a conversation, but looking back to it, what would it look like if you wrote that out and really had to have some care with your words, explaining something that you wanted to do or that you had already done, just helping people take on that identity.
Using everyday occurrences to use as a locus of invention. That's cool. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah, and we talk about that some in the chapter on helping teacher writers begin to write. I've seen this done very well. Kristen Holly Turner has used the prompt at conferences, tell about a time when you saw kids harmed by a policy. And she's done that in sessions for teachers interested in writing for the Writers Who Care blog. And it's nice. Fascinating to watch at the tables. You know, you have eight people at a table and people are talking to a neighbor and get very animated, and about 6 or 7 minutes in, she'll say, now stop and write that and keep writing. And then when others at the table get to hear that teacher read aloud and just react live in the moment, and the author, the teacher writer, can see on their faces, and hearing their reactions, how powerful that piece of writing is, even in a very early draft. I think that's part of supporting teachers, is just helping them recognize that identity as teacher writer, that they have something to say.
That's great. Hey, Leah, say that prompt again, because it was so good. I don't want
yeah,
to.
Yeah, it was. And I need to credit that to Kristen Holly Turner.
Okay.
Tell about a time when you saw kids harmed by a policy.
Yeah. It gets right at the advocacy role that Troy was talking about, and sort of brings all of those occasions where you feel that to the surface, and you can actually see it and try to do something about it. It's great.
And a piece that came out of that prompt on the Writers Who Care blog, there's a piece called What the Data Won't Show. And it's from 2015 by Susan Lazier. And it really kind of went viral about testing and what it means for one young student.
Awesome. All right. Christine, you've done a lot with online work on teachers, too. And talk about how, the way all of you talked about your writing groups is, there's a great deal of intimacy. There's a great deal of knowledge about each other's lives and work. How have you used online writing groups to sort of sustain that sense of intimacy?
That's a great question. Well, and I think, you know, I'm going to pick up on your thread of advocacy, too, because I think one of the ways that connects is it's a sense of advocating for ourselves. Literally, like I use this metaphor in the book of creating space. And I think online is a place where sometimes it's easier to create space because you don't have the travel time and you're able to connect across distance. When we first conceptualized our writing group, we were kind of conceptualizing this sort of like corner table in a coffee shop. And it was this kind of, you know, very intimate kind of face-to-face context. But we very quickly scattered geographically. And I think part of what has allowed us to go on so seamlessly, including when one of our members was in China for a year, we continued meeting throughout the entire experience, was the fact that we were meeting exclusively online. I think one of the first things that was really important for us was figuring out what we wanted out of the group. There's lots of ways of crafting a writing group and lots of priorities you can bring into it. We were really prioritizing the opportunity to talk about writing, so we wanted a live context, and we used Skype and Google Hangout. And then we also needed a private space to share our writing. We rejected the idea of using email because of the fact that it's linked with every other part of your life. So we've played with both having a private wiki and then also just using shared cloud storage like Google Docs or Google Drive. And I think taken together, those create this sort of virtual space where when you enter the writing group meeting and we hold meetings for about 2 hours every other week. In fact, we're meeting right after this conversation. We're meeting at 7:30 tonight. But that becomes our space, our sort of virtual room where we enter into the Google Hangout, we open up our shared storage, and we can see each other's writing. We can have the conversations. I think the other thing that I just want to I go into a lot of sort of the logistics of this in the second chapter of my book, but the other thing I want to emphasize is two of our core commitments. One is that we really made it a priority within our writing group to invest in and build our relationships. We out of that two-hour time, 30 minutes of it, on average, we devote to catching up with each other's lives because we want it to be a context in which we can share writing that matters to us. And we want to have a broader context for the writing. And then the other piece that we have really prioritized and that has become a cornerstone for us has been guarding choice and really protecting our right to choose what we bring. So not just genre. You know, we can bring something that we've been assigned if that's the piece of writing that's on our mind. We can bring something that we initiate. But also having the right to basically just bring ideas and to not have to feel like we have to apologize if we don't have a text to share, but to say tonight, you know, I'm this idea and I don't have anything written down yet, and can somebody scribe for me while I talk, and it just takes off from there.
Yeah, probably guilt would be the quickest way to kill a writing group, right?
Oh, yes. It's definitely the way of turning something that can be nurturing and kind of fun into something that feels like an obligation when you're like, oh, God, I have to have something. And it also means then that you might come up with excuses not to go. Like, we really look at this as collaborative writing time, and you participate as a writer, whether you are bringing a written text or whether you are just helping to develop and grow somebody else's.
I really like what you said about – oh, sorry.
No, you go, Leah. Go first.
Well, I really liked what Christine said, too, about how sometimes people in her group scribe for somebody else. We do that in our group, too, and I think that's just one of the most powerful gifts of listening and then writing for each other in the notes so that the person who's talking can just continue on but look back at it. And it's just an amazing thing that happens in the moment with writing in an informal way that no one else will ever see.
Right. Great. Troy, you've been listening in. I bet you have some thoughts to add to how to best support teacher writers.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, to make the gratuitous and shameless plug, both books have really wonderful lists of questions and ideas that are highlighted throughout the chapters as well as in the appendices. But to be a little more philosophical for a moment, I want to step back from that question about how to support teacher writers and talk a little more broadly about genre, because I think part of what I see in working with teacher writers, and definitely something that Anne and Jim and Lee and I talked through, and I know Christine is really puzzled through this as well, is just this notion that teachers don't always feel they have the authority to say things. And so authorizing is not only a Harris move from the College Ready Writers Program, but it's also something that we really need to think carefully about in terms of getting teachers a voice. So one of my, you know, first mentors and, you know, just great influences on me was Patty Stock. I was fortunate enough to spend some time with her when I was at Michigan State, both as an undergrad and as a grad student. And her article from 2001 about toward a theory and genre in teacher research reminds me of a couple things. So I just want to read a quote here. You know, one of her main points is that she says, I'm arguing that reflective practitioners whom I consider to be teacher researchers use unfamiliar research methods and forums for publication, methods and forums that are not yet or have not yet been recognized as legitimate or authorized to build the base of knowledge that informs their practice. So she'd been pushing back in the whole article against kind of the what we now would call the gold standard, what works clearinghouse style, you know, quantitative, randomized, statistically significant design. And you know, I'm not going to get into this entire, you know, epistemological debate here, but just to say that what Patty offered in that article and what has really guided me in working with teachers is that we really need a more expansive discussion of genre. And so now, you know, in addition to the things that she argues for, like anecdote and workshop as
genre, is what I was thinking of. Yeah.
Performance. Yeah. We also have social media and we have blog posts and we have videos and we have wiki pages and we have YouTube video clips and, you know, just any number of other, you know, what we would consider more traditional as well as digital writing outlets. And so I think that when we talk about the ways to best support teacher writers, we really need to help them reimagine genre and to think about the ways in which, you know, not only the anecdote and the workshop can work as pieces of writing, but also all of the other things that technology can afford us.
Right. The only piece of writing that counts is not a peer-reviewed journal article. You know, there's a bunch of kind of writing. I'm
so glad you brought up that article, Troy, because I remember hearing Patty talk about it again years ago, but I remember it really influencing me. And I think you know, Tom, you asked at the beginning of this little sub-discussion, what's different working with teacher writers than maybe other writers? And I think I think that is a part of this, is that I think sometimes there's this feeling, not only what Leah and Troy have talked about already, about, you know, when can I count myself as a teacher writer? Do I need to be published? You know, and kind of dispelling some of those myths and saying, no, like, this is, let's not go to that direction of, but also saying, like, you know, your writing matters whether or not it ever makes it directly into the classroom. Like, your writing life is significant and is worth nurturing, even if there are particular pieces for months on end that you spend that you don't have any intention of sharing with students, that those can do really important work in your life. And I think one of the things I keep coming back to is, as a teacher, now I'm just talking as a classroom teacher, I was always so committed and am always so committed to feeling like I wanted my students to experience writing as a way of having a voice in their lives, as something they could reach for in a variety of capacities in their lives. I feel like sometimes as teachers, we don't give ourselves that same luxury. We say, well, I can make space for writing if it's good for my profession or if it's good for my classroom. And I think one of the things I think both of us are arguing is that there's so many things that we hope for our students, and that we can seek that same kind of rich writing life, and we should seek that same sort of rich writing life for ourselves as teachers too.
That's really well said, Christine.
Thanks.
And a thing about a profession that is service oriented, that people really put the students before themselves sometimes, and that's not actually the best way to go for sustained commitment. So, good point. Speaking of sustaining things.
Nice transition.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you. People join these writing groups in summer invitationals often, and they sort of invariably have like this wonderful time. But it's fairly rare, but not completely rare, that those groups sustain themselves after the summer shoot. And both of you are involved in groups that sustain over the time, and both of you write about the problems and challenges of sustaining writing groups. I had an interesting discussion the other day with the amazing Joy Everett, who always finds exactly the right thing to say at the right time. And I was talking about how I had a couple blogs to write and how they seemed just out of my reach, like I never had time to do it, just like teachers in your writing groups. Like it just didn't ever happen, and I was a couple weeks behind where I wanted to be and so forth. And she said, well, Tom, do you enjoy it? And I thought, no, I don't. and immediately I thought, what would I enjoy writing about? And I completely sort of changed sort of my approach to the blogs. And I wrote two in the last week, so I was really happy. But it was all about, like, what do I actually want to write about? What am I currently interested in? What am I curious about? What don't I know everything about that I'm tired of writing down, you know? So I think, that leads me a little bit to sustainability, that there has to be some sort of ongoing sustaining pleasure. I know, Christine, you talked a little bit about that, but I'd like to hear from all of you. I think this is a really important issue for people, is how do you sustain teachers' interest in writing? And let's see, Troy, you want to go first this time?
Sure. Yeah, I have a couple things in regard to this. And I know that Christine talks about some of the technologies that she and her group uses and describes them in her book. And I think that anyone listening to this podcast can probably figure out someone that they know in their network who knows how to use Google Hangouts and things like that. So I'm not going to delve into a whole bunch of technical talk right now. Instead, what I'd like to do is think just a little bit more about audience and then thinking about that technical piece so can do. So one thing I would say is that, first of all, we do have a Facebook group that, or a page technically, that we
Try to post announcements when we see good writing from teachers, and we invite teachers who are writers to post there as well. If you search on Facebook for Teacher Writer Network, it should come up, or you can just do www.facebook.com/Teacher Writer Network. And part of the reason we do that is because this is a little anecdote I'll use a lot of times in workshops and talking with teachers. Like, oh, well, I had my students blogging and they posted to their blog, but they just weren't motivated. And so the flip side to the coin of what Tom was just describing is that, you know, yes, we can have our students post to a blog, but just like the tree in the forest that fell, if there's no one there, let anybody hear it. And so I think that we have to talk with teachers about creating audience and giving them spaces where we know audiences exist, and, you know, cultivating audience. So Twitter and any number of hashtag conversations that people can contribute to, you know, most notably like InChat or NCTE chat or the Teach Writing hashtag, as well as many things that happen for NWP itself. And then, you know, also, I think the Writers Who Care blog is a great model. And so one of the things we've done at our Writing Project site, and I can say that I started this and I have stepped away. It's really my friend and colleague here at CMU, Liz Brockman, and then two of our TCs, Janet Nyer and Debbie Meister, who are an editorial team on our Chippewa River Writing Project blog. And what they do is they pick up the stories from our TCs. And I wanted to say this, but I'm saying it in the best possible way, like the really reluctant TCs, like the ones who feel, oh, I just really don't have anything to say. So like our most recent entry actually is from a teacher from our 2015 Summer Institute. They worked with her for nearly a year and a half on one blog post. So patience and persistence and opportunity for that audience, I think, is really, really important. And there are places where, you know, your voice will be heard. And that particular teacher actually got some comments directly on the blog and through our listserv started an interesting conversation. So it takes a lot for people to put their voice out there. And we need to make sure, using technology in smart ways and using our social networks in smart ways, to know that they're going to have a response, I think, is equally as important.
Agreed. Yeah. The value of an audience. Leah, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I'm going to keep pulling on that thread about the value of an audience and how a writing group really serves as a stand-in for that audience, or even figuring out who that audience is. And I think one of the things that was so fun about writing the chapter together about starting and sustaining writing groups, I kind of felt like I fell into the luckiest place in the world, and kind of a love letter to the writing group, you know, that we all got to write and recognize, like, this is what's working, and this is a reminder about what we want to preserve, about how we work in this group. And this odd mixture of really high and really low standards, like, there's a standard of, like, you reserve this time. But also there's a standard of, like, life happens, and if you can't be there that day and we were scheduled, we're going ahead. We're protecting the time, and that's the high standard, but there's a no-guilt side around it. And there's a sense of you don't have to come with something that's, you know, a full first draft or even a half first draft, to come in and say, I don't really know what is the next thing I'm supposed to write. And here are a few ideas, and have done the writing that opens up that conversation. We never have trouble using that starting point as, you know, a generative hour together, and then that it does lead into writing for each other. And so just being willing to give each other permission, and that sometimes, I liked what Christine was saying earlier about relational work. We end up doing that in our writing group as well, really starting for the first 15 to 30 minutes of probably about a 90-minute session. just catching up. And sometimes when you're kind of between pieces and trying to figure out the next thing, or the piece you're working on seems like the hardest thing in the world, which for me is always whatever piece I'm working on right now. And I think that's really true for a lot of writers, right? That knowing how much I care about the relationships as well, I am going to have something to be able to show up and be there with the group. And I am confident that they're going to talk me into being my best writing self while I'm there. I just trust them with that. So it's really the power of a friendship.
Yeah, built over time. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, it definitely is something that develops over time, right, through these relationships. And I think the writing is a part of that building. Like, the talk and the writing are fundamental parts of what builds that community, if I'm not mistaken in what you're saying, Leah, right?
Mm-hmm.
So being able
to trust
what we bring, and being able to bring something. I mean, I think one of the hardest things as a writer, like Leah was saying, is being able to bring something before it's ready for the public, you know, whatever the public may be. So being able to bring it when you're not happy with it, being able to bring it when you have more questions than answers. And I find that's the most rich time to bring a piece of writing to a writing group community.
Exactly. There's the most possibility at that moment. There's possibility
definitely
for everything at that moment. It can go in a way you didn't ever even imagine.
Absolutely. And I think that's probably been one of the most transformative pieces of us participating in a writing group, is it has really, and probably one of the places that's really, speaking of shaping our pedagogy, is recognizing when we need feedback is not when it's being proofread, but when it's like really formative and being able to kind of talk through what it feels like to struggle with a piece. And to be uncertain and not to like what you have. And that trust in the process of writing, but also the trust in the significance of talk around that writing, I think is really significant. And getting back to your question, Tom, about, you know, we start these relationships in writing groups and summer institutes, and then where do we take them? I think, you know, to echo what Troy said, I think both books have some really good guiding questions on how to support that work for teacher writers and for people that want to help support teacher writers. One of the things I think is really important is being able to articulate some of those commitments and then maybe just make the beginning commitment of what are you able to sign on for. For our group, we were able to sign on for 2 hours every other week. We didn't want to commit to advanced prep work, so we don't read in advance of our meetings. And that was part of kind of where we were at that time. We can always send things in between meetings, but what we really wanted to kind of bound that meeting so that we knew what to expect when we came. And then being able to show up even if you, as we said, even if there's not a piece of writing that you immediately have to share. And I think those were two really important first steps in carving out space for a writing group. And then I think two other things that I want to kind of piggyback on that you all were talking about is the significance of discussing obstacles and discussing enjoyment. And really respecting both of those experiences. So, I mean, we've talked about in our writing group everything from how we write, you know, is it handwritten, is it typed? You know, at what point are you doing it on a blog? Are you doing it on online? And really thinking about what feels productive and what feels generative and what feels like it blocks you. And then the same thing with topics. To give a very quick example, one of the pieces of writing I share in our book is when my godmother was dying, unfortunately, from cancer, she was sending these beautiful emails to our family, just talking us through kind of what she was experiencing and just updating us. And that was a time when I started gathering that language and just feeling like I wanted to do something with it. But I reached a point where it was too hard for me to enter into that piece of writing. Like, it just was too painful. Mm-hmm. And so my writing group was a place where I talked about that experience. I talked about my choice to set it aside. But then I also knew when I did come back to it, which was several months later, my writing group would remember that conversation and be ready to help grow it. So really kind of respecting the ebbs and flow of energy and kind of leaning on writing group members to help you nurture it when it was back time again.
That's great. I think there's one more issue I think that would be important to talk. I think for a lot of people, they can't imagine finding the time to write. Like just the literal, like, where does it, my day is completely full. And, you know, at 9:21, I'm in bed because I'm so tired. How would you support teachers, or how would you, you know, advise teachers who feel like they just don't even have the time in the day to do it?
I'm so glad you added that question in, Tom, because I think that's, you know, it's something we took on early in the book, and really looking back, we took a chapter with it because we see this all the time,
right.
And we see it in our own lives as well. We came to looking at what are the levers within a person's life that, you know, what are the things that are within your control? We came back to a book called Influencer. It's not a writing type of book. It's more of a change leadership book.
Mm-hmm.
And the authors of Influencer are Grenny, Patterson, Maxfield, McMillian, and Switzler.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about personal and social and structural motivation. And that's really what we got into, kind of motivation and ability. So Christine was talking about enjoyment and that personal piece of it, thinking about, like, why do you want to do this? Go back to finding what's the joy in writing and really highlighting that and keeping the kinds of writing or the times for writing focused on that rather than, you know, somebody else is having this feeling like somebody else is making you or you're feeling guilty or you're not living up.
Right.
So looking at your goals, looking at your motives, having some short writing sessions. And then with social things, we've talked about that a lot already with writing groups. And, you know, also, if you're a really social person, finding a place to go and write with other people. I think a lot of writing projects do this well, too, where they talk about sacred writing time or writing marathons or retreats or things like that. And then some of the structural things, these can come off as a little bit gimmicky if they're all by themselves. I think it's important to pair them with the personal goals and motivations. There's not an easy fix or a magic bullet, but when you are really motivated, realizing that sometimes putting the actual time for yourself on your calendar and titling that in a way that motivates you to remember what your goal is, or one I've used for a long time is I use a timer to get started, and I say, I'm going to write for at least 15 minutes uninterrupted. And for me, it never fails, but then I want to keep going for at least a little while longer and often a lot longer. And if I have the time, I'll take it. And if I don't, you know, there'll be another day tomorrow.
Right.
A timer to know when to end so you don't forget your kids at daycare or forget to go on to the next thing, but just freeing that mental space. Not that I've ever done that more than once. But, yeah, those kinds of things, I think, just giving yourself permission to do small bits at a time, if that's your way, or to really kind of binge and put that on the calendar so it almost is like a spa for you.
Yeah.
I think I'll add, I completely agree with those strategies. I think those are really rich. And I think also talking about when you feel like you don't have time, what kind of writing might you be doing? And kind of like what Leah was saying earlier, is there an email that you've written over and over again that, or some piece of writing that maybe you can repurpose? Or even just name as writing, that when you come with your writing group to say, this is the writing I did, so that we can start building coherence across our writing lives instead of feeling like you're a bad writing group member or a bad writer. If you've been doing writing for other purposes that week, let's name it and let's think about what that writing looked like and if any of that would benefit from the writing group.
Great. Thank you. So we are...
I was just going to add that another friend and colleague, Mitch Novus, co-director of Red Cedar Writing Project, offer some advice at the end of our collection here. And the one thing that he ends with saying is that, you know, there's never time for writing, but there must always be time for writing. This paradox
right.
comes up in life.
It's a great line.
And then at the end, he says, yeah, at least I get a little writing done. Not enough to let me sleep well, but enough to keep me going. And so I think it's that idea of taking the moments that you have and carving out what you can do at that moment is helpful. And then that other piece of advice that I always heard, especially during dissertation writing, was, you know, end on a downhill slope. So kind of what Leah was just saying, you know, end at a point where you know you're going to be able to pick it up again real fast and
right.
jump right back
right.
into it.
Exactly. Well, I want to thank you all for joining us today. It was really interesting to hear all of you sort of have this very coherent vision of how to support teacher writers. So thank you for joining us. I want to remind all the listeners of the books that you have published. So Leah and Troy, along with their colleagues Ann Whitney and Jim Fredrickson, published Coaching Teacher Writers, Practical Steps to Nurture Professional Writing. And Christine has written The Teacher Writers, Creating Writing Groups for Personal and Professional Growth. And the best way to get these books is to go to the nwb.org website and go to the bookstore there. It not only helps NWP to buy them there, but they're also the cheapest price available. So for your institutes or for your own personal library, both will be good. I really enjoyed the conversation, and I think I appreciate most the depth with which you sort of address this topic, and it really reminds all of us of how important it is that teachers write, and not just because they're people, but also because they're teachers. So I'm open to any last comments from anyone. If you have some last thoughts. And then we'll close it out for today.
Thanks so much.
I think the one last thought.
This
is Christine.
Support teacher writers.
Oh, go ahead.
No, that was all I needed to say. Was thank you, Tom.
Yeah, definitely.
Welcome.
And
it's really nice talking to you.
I think we would
ahead,
all
Christine.
Welcome if we can be helpful to anybody. Reach out through our contact information that Tom, I'm sure, is going to be posted somewhere, because we'd be happy to continue conversations with any sites.
Great. And thank
Absolutely.
You, Troy, too.
Yep. Ditto to Leah, ditto to Christine. And thank you, Tom.
All right. Well, this has been NWP Radio on May 11th, and thank you for joining us.